We are born free, and we will die free. The time in between, though, that's complicated.
In that time, governments, institutions, and our egos will limit our ability to find true freedom in this life. These are real stories of real people overcoming the odds, persevering in justice, and unlocking their potential. Welcome to Finding Freedom. Here's your host, John Oderman.
Hey, hey, welcome back. Welcome back to another episode of Finding Freedom right here on the Lions of Liberty Network. And have a great discussion lined up today. Going to be talking with a really interesting guy about cryptocurrency, about encrypted messaging, about a whole host of other different things that I know you all are going to love. I know last week I said that I was going to have Chris Spangle in this slot, but we're shifting things around. Chris will be on next week, and this week I'll be talking with JB Benjamin, who I'll introduce in just 1 minute. But before I do that, I just want to remind you guys, if you like this content, if you like what we do, please consider supporting us. You can do that on Patreon, patreon.com/lionsofliberty or lionsofliberty.locals.com. You can get bonus content and all that good stuff. So check that out. Without any further delay, though, let's bring JB in here. And JB is located in London, and he's got a lot of different things going on. He has a Vox Messenger app. He has Vox Crypto. He has Cryotech. Really a maverick in this crazy digital landscape that we have. And we're going to talk about all of that stuff. Excited to talk with JB. JB, welcome to Finding Freedom.
Hi, it's great to be here. While I was in the waiting room, by the way, I heard your epic intro music. Damn! I mean, that I need that as a ringtone on Vox Messenger. Seriously, it's very epic and awe-inspiring.
Yeah, we can make that happen for you.
Make it a selectable item. So yeah, I'm not actually based in London, actually.
You're not? That's bad information.
Yeah, I'm actually based in Warwickshire, which is right in the Midlands, right in the middle of England. I live in a town called Nuneaton, and I've moved all of my companies to Coventry. And there was actually a very conscious reason for that, because London, to put into perspective for Americans, is kind of like Washington, D.C. We know what kind of a swamp Washington, D.C. can be. Well, think of Washington, D.C. on crack times six, and that's London, basically. So I was like, you know what? No, I'm moving all my tech companies out of there. We're going to one of our internal policies is that we don't want to keep bringing people in. We're actually going to, if we can't find a talent here locally, we're going to train people. And it doesn't matter. We don't care how long it's going to take or how much money it's going to cost. We'll retrain them. If we need coders, we'll train them here. That's part of the reason why we're bringing these companies here, because, you know, you can't rely on the governments to take care of state funding and keeping schools running, can you? Apparently. So I do have three companies. I've got Cryotech, where I created the world's first post-quantum encrypted chat messenger, and Vox Crypto, which actually allows you to do bulk crypto transfers without having to worry about multiple gas fees. And on top of that, we designed it in such a way that your money is not actually stored in a holding smart contract like any of the other crypto wrappers that operate, which basically means there's no juicy little attack surfaces for hackers to go after, and there's no excuses for us to go, oh my God, guys, we're really sorry about this, but the contract, it kind of got hacked somehow. We don't know how, by the way, ignore us driving off in a Maserati. It's all good. No, so we designed a smart contract, so it's not even a holding smart contract. It does all the processing on the fly. Then my other company is Digin Technologies, where I solved another problem, which is how do you synchronize multiple camera feeds in 3D without needing somebody to walk around with a QR code or put sticky codes all over the place? So I created an algorithm for autonomous, intelligent, markerless camera sync. So you can instantly synchronize hundreds of cameras to create a real-time 3D landscape, which you can then navigate around in 6 degrees of freedom. We've got a patent out for that we've currently got in process for that. And then my third company is Gorgon Black Box, which is my private military corporation, which is where we take the technologies that we develop at Cryotech and Digin, and we build them out for military and private security applications.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, the last one there I was not familiar with at all. But
yes. So, if you're going to build dangerous tech, you got to make sure you can control that dangerous tech, you know?
Yeah, especially with everything going on today with AI. And before we start talking about each of these, I'm just super curious, man, like a little background on you. Like, how did you go down this road? Where are you from? Where did you come from?
Okay, so I'm actually from a council estate in Birmingham. Birmingham is known because it's the second capital of England, but it's also known because of an amazingly popular series called Peaky Blinders. I actually grew up in Bordesley, in Bordesley Green East, which is literally their ends. And I'm a child of the 80s. So I was born and raised going to protest marches for freeing the Birmingham Six and fighting other social injustices. My sister and I were almost born in prison because my mother was going to poll tax riots and stuff like
that. Oh, wow.
I was homeschooled. Wasn't educated in the mainstream way. I was homeschooled in the traditional British 3 R's way, reading, writing, arithmetic, learned a lot about history. I was writing essays and engaging in critical thinking by the time I was 5 and 6, Descartes, Baudrillard, philosophers, all that kind of stuff. Originally, I was trying to be a physicist, but as we all know, what happens with overbearing parents, the kid goes in the opposite bloody direction. So I decided, screw you, Mom. I'm going to go into what? I'm going to be a filmmaker. And then I discovered very quickly that here in Britain, the only way you're going to get film funded is if you're going to make a stupid rom-com with a bumbling stereotype of an Englishman that goes, oh, I say, rah, or that Hugh Grant BS. Or you get to make a film about, yeah, in it, hood culture, yeah, bruv, bang, bang, bang. No. I like Akira Kurosawa. I like Shaw Brothers. I like the old martial arts kung fu movies. So far removed from what I would get funding for. So I kind of did a lateral move. I was like, what can I do? Well, I love programming. I love coding. I did my first diploma in programming in BASIC when I was 13. So I was like, cool, I'm going to go to 3D, which is what I did. And then I did my dissertation in adaptive AI because I started playing around in AI back in 2011. And when all my tutors were calling me a nutcase, telling me, JB, this is not going to happen in our lifetimes. What's wrong with you? I mean, I have PhD proposals which would have effectively built Palantir and Midjourney before they existed from way back in 2011 and stuff. I went to London. Studied in London, did my degree in London at Ravensbourne, where I later on became a senior lecturer of computer science. So yes, I've experienced the mainstream academic educational system. Oh, how absolutely awesome that is. Had 4 children who are absolutely amazing. So my 3 eldest live with me. They're 18, 17, and one of them's coming up to 16. And then my youngest, Cal-El, is 7. He will hopefully be living with me soon. A whole bunch of things going on there, but yeah, stereotypical baby mama problems, you know, black guy, baby mama problems kind of goes with the territory, unfortunately. It's one of those things. And Vox Messenger, I got to be honest, it wasn't deliberate. It was to stop myself from becoming, when my ex was mucking around with access to my kids, I did not want to be one of those guys that joins Fathers for Justice and then starts dressing up in a Batman suit and jumping off bridges or becoming an alcoholic or whatever happens to all these guys that lose access to their kids and then go, oh, it's the mother's fault, man. It's all her fault. But then they kind of gave up and didn't really keep going. You know, I didn't want to be like, basically kind of like my dad. Yeah. So I just basically built Vox Messenger to stop myself from going insane. It was just to kill time between court cases and court hearings originally. But then I realized, actually, there's a problem here. If we look at all the different social media networks, they are exploiting our digital selves. Now, because of my background in education, I feel very passionately about activism, our humanity, and certain things like not exploiting fellow human beings. And that is what advertising revenue is. That's what targeted retargeted ads are. They are exploitation of your digital soul. Kind of feels a little bit like the transatlantic slave trade, just with fewer whips, basically. It's just that they get to take control of your digital identity and make a shit ton of money from it. I mean, we're talking about obscene volumes of money. I mean, bear in mind, we have all the top CEOs in the world talking about how they're such great civil humanitarians and how they really want to look after the world, but really, what are they doing?
I have to bring this up because it's in the news recently, but I don't know if you saw the headline with Zuckerberg is raising cattle in Hawaii and he's feeding them macadamia nuts and beer to fatten them up. And then you have right over in Maui, not far away, which burned down. You have hundreds of people without houses, and he is, you know, worried about fattening up his calves with macadamia nuts, which are extremely expensive.
Don't get me started on old Zuckerberg. I mean, seriously, this is the guy. He's one of the guys that actually, not being funny, if anybody wants to blame anybody for why Mr. JB Webb Benjamin is here with all of these companies and tech ready to clean sweep everybody out the way, who? Zuckerberg. Cambridge Analytica. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw every single one of all of these guys who are put in charge of our technology, these people who are meant to be the bastions, the guardians of the new world. And every single one of them is only interested in making money, not actually doing anything. All of the other, what are the billionaires doing? They're either building bunkers under their houses to for God only knows what, fastening up castle, hiring secret fire brigade units to protect their properties somehow before a fire takes place. All kinds of crazy stuff happening. Or, you know, what's the other favorite? Building clocks inside of massive mountains that will out-survive humanity. Or what's the other one? Launching rockets, penis-shaped rockets into space. None of which solves humanity's problems. If you want to solve humanity's problems, you create sustainable universal basic income. Sorry, that's it. Simple as it. We are moving to a period of abundance. The concept of consumer capitalism requires scarcity, and scarcity is a really very artificial paradigm. It's something that is leveraged to maintain consumer capitalism.
And let's put a marker on that universal basic income, because I've heard you talk about that before. Want to come back to it. Let's dive in and get, you know, more specific about Vox Messenger first and talk about what that is. What does, you know, I'm a kind of a smart guy, but I'm not a quantum algorithm smart guy. Can you explain post quantum algorithms and what that means for, you know, the privacy and everything?
Of course. Okay, so let's first of all remove the buzzwords. Post-quantum encryption is a massive buzzword. Doesn't it sound amazing? It sounds so Star Trek-y. Gives you tingles. What it actually basically means is you're using a form of encryption that is based on something called lattice-based cryptography. Lattice-based cryptography at its fundamentally simplest level is the process of finding multiple points across a grid that could either be 2D or 3D. That is insanely complex to break. Now, the name post-quantum is used to indicate this form of algorithm or form of mathematics is too complex to be decoded or brute force decrypted using classic computers. Classic computers being computers that stick to Moore's algorithm. Anyway, the current standard used by Signal, WhatsApp, and everybody else that actually uses encryption other than Telegram that only uses it when you enable it is called elliptic curve. Elliptic curve is beautiful. Elliptic curve is so simple. All you're doing is finding a couple of points on an elliptic curve. I mean, you can root if you know your history of cybersecurity, those of you out there who have studied that kind of stuff and have been called conspiracy theorists will know that RSA were involved in what looks like a massive backdooring of elliptic curve standards. That being the case, that's why when I was looking at encryption and I was looking at building Vox Messenger, one of the first things I looked at is what encryption am I going to use? And the first thing I thought was I ain't using elliptic because there's no point. Now, what is the purpose of Vox Messenger? The purpose of Vox Messenger is to give everybody back their ability to communicate privately without oversight, without the fear of somebody stealing their data for ads retargeting, and then using their data and all of that information about how they speak, who they speak to, what they speak about for ads revenue generation. Vox Messenger is completely free. We are adding modules to it that we hope will delight and improve your lives, which you are free to subscribe to. You don't have to. Mm-hmm. The core encryption and your core privacy and safety is always free. We are not doing what our competitors have done, where we're going to charge you for an extra level of encryption and stuff like that, because that starts making privacy and security what? It makes it elitist. It makes it something that only the haves can have and not the rest of us. Now, bear in mind, there is a ton of research out there that indicates that humans work their best with a level of privacy. What happens to humans when you give them oversight, when you make them feel watched, when you make them feel observed? It gives them psychotic mental health issues. There's a reason why in Guantanamo Bay, one of the forms of torture used was keeping a person awake and making them feel like they're perpetually being watched and harassing them. Yeah. Not being funny. That kind of feels like using Facebook lately. You know, the amount of, you can't say anything on any of these networks, because if you do, you're going to get cancelled. You're going to get deplatformed in 35 seconds. But hold on. I thought these CEOs were building platforms for everybody. And that's what we've basically done.
If anyone's questioning that feeling, I would encourage them to think about the last time they were out driving or maybe just walking and a police officer drove by. And all of a sudden, you start thinking, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm doing everything right. I'm driving perfectly, right? I'm driving the best ever. And I mean, it's crazy, like the mind fuck it is when that happens. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, there is a segment of the population out there who kind of compartmentalizes this and says, well, as long as I'm not doing anything wrong, then there's nothing to be afraid of. Like,
let me address that one. Okay. So there's a saying that we were all brought up with, you know, particularly us Gen Xers, which was, if you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to worry about. Yes. Unfortunately, though, people should study history a little more, because that saying that people use so widely to defend a complete lack of security was actually designed by the Nazis as a marketing tool to make it easier for people to feel safer about giving up information, to make it, to normalize it. It was like, I think it was Goebbels. Seriously, this is an actual thing. People need to really think about what they're saying. Think, break this down a minute. You have nothing to hide. If you have nothing to fear, if you have nothing to hide. Actually, so that you're basically saying that the assumption is I am guilty just because I don't want you in my business? That's incredibly invasive. Yeah, sorry. No, I completely disagree with that. I mean, let's not get it twisted. Yeah. I ain't hoarding guns in my house. I ain't doing the crazy stuff. But if people keep spying on me and trying to push me, they may push me in that direction. Bear in mind.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a
concept. That's what it does. It leads people that way, just kind of naturally. But so let's talk about so no ads. You know, there's some things that you can subscribe to. Is there a video component now? Is that part of it been launched?
Yeah, so basically we have encrypted video launching as part of it, which unfortunately, yes, we do have to charge for. We can't keep that bloody costs actually a lot of money to run encrypted video, especially if you want to use servers and services that you're running with a high level of confidence and not being already intercepted or manipulated by Predator or Pegasus in any kind of way. So that's bloody expensive. So we are actually charging for that. It does mean that we are effectively sort of going into the Zoom space a little bit, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, I've got to be honest, the way I look at competition is that competition is necessary. It actually builds and breeds innovation. There's a reason why messaging, encryption, all these things have taken so long to actually advance in terms of innovation, in terms of usability and UI and UX. If you look at the messengers, none of them have really changed what they look like since MSN Messenger. Even our one kind of looks like that. I mean, we are building a new version which incorporates Vox Crypto into Vox Messenger, which means you'll actually be able to pay your friends, your family, your colleagues, anybody inside of your communications, natively inside of your app. This basically means the Western world will finally have its WeChat. And we have that launching in April. You know, there's lots of we will be publicizing this, of course. We will be launching a beta where people will be able to join in and jump in and check it out. And we're moving to a completely decentralized model for our messaging. Also, the next version of Vox Messenger is completely interoperable. And what does that mean? It basically means when we release the version 3 version of Vox Messenger, you'll be able to talk to all of your friends and family who are on WhatsApp or on Signal or on Telegram without actually having to sign up to those platforms. From a simple
how does that work? yes, I just don't understand. How would that look? How would that work? When you're on Vox Messenger?
So you're using version 3 of Vox Messenger and you're scrolling through your contacts list and you want to speak to somebody. Now, what the system does is it can actually see which networks these people are on because we have access to their APIs. This basically means when you'll see a little logo come up beside their name and say your friend is on WhatsApp, you just tap that and it will literally invite, you'll literally just start talking to them as if you were in, it'll come through on their messenger as if it's on WhatsApp, and it will come through on yours on Vox Messenger. We've basically got technology that allows us to spin up DMZ servers that can sit in between, so that basically while you're talking to your friend who is completely IT illiterate and you cannot convince to join Vox Messenger, you can maintain the security of your end of the communications without having to risk using any of their servers. And given that WhatsApp and Signal are now both run and owned by the same person, Brian Acton, and Signal went closed source on all of their servers for some reason after taking $20 million off of him. And given that Tucker Carlson recently revealed that he was pulled in by a three-letter agency for talking to Putin about having an interview with him, we can all pretty much infer that a lot of these messaging platforms are in some formal way co-opted.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here in the United Kingdom, they've been changing all the laws to make it impossible to run a tech company without in some way being embedded with the government, basically. Now, we're moving all of our companies out of the United Kingdom because we will not comply with that kind of nonsense. At the end of the day, we build our products for our consumers and our shareholders to benefit mm-hmm. from. You know? And at a bigger scale, we're building it for the objective of providing a sustainable platform that generates revenue for universal basic income.
So I'm curious. This interruptibility, tough word to say, but really, really, I'm going to start using that word all the time now. Sounds so impressive.
Yeah. But, I'm so interoperable with you, man.
Why hasn't anyone else done this before?
Because it doesn't really benefit them. Think about it. The only reason why any of the social media platforms, communication networks right now are looking at interoperability is because the European Union have made it mandatory as part of GDPR. And said to basically, they're fed up of all of these big tech billionaires who are all from the US predominantly, basically snarfing up every single person's personal details and then selling it to the highest bidder, while at the same time claiming to be patriots and claiming that they're going to be the ones that save us and lead us to the promised land. Yeah. Yeah. No. it's one of those. Unfortunately, all of these systems are designed to make money, but they're kind of making money for the point of making money. When I ran the revenue projections of all the different systems I've been building over the years, part of the reason why I decided that we're going to contribute towards universal basic income as a goal, is because I was very unsettled by the volume. I know it's going to sound nuts. I was very unsettled by the amounts of money based on the financial modeling that this stuff could make. Mm. Because look at all the people around us who have that kind of money. Scary ass people, you know, and generally are any of us better off for it? So, you know, you got to know what you're going to do with it if you're going to go earn it.
Yeah, well, I think this, maybe I'm wrong, but I think this ties back to your thoughts on universal basic income, because if I'm understanding this correctly, the way that you're looking at it is sort of this like a voluntary network of universal basic income. Right.
Essentially, so basically, the biggest problem with universal basic income, if you look at it as a way of solving poverty, is that every single time a person mentions it, they'll go, "Oh my God, we're going to save everybody with universal basic income, and nobody's going to have to work again. It's going to be amazing. By the way, we're going to have to put some people's taxes up. Hold on, what?" You know, and that's about where it falls flat on its face. You know, unless you're Sam Altman and you want to pay the poorest people in the poorest parts of the world to give up their digital identity by shoving their face into a silver orb with a very sketchy plan for how that's going to lead to UBI. It still hasn't been explained how it's going to even be sustained, actually. Mm-hmm. We worked out very quickly that all the different platforms we have, we have Vox Messenger, we have Vox Crypto, which is coming out. Vox Crypto, what makes Vox Crypto as a crypto wallet different to everybody else is that we built, as I said, that smart contract that allows you mm-hmm. to send, say, $100 to 500 people, but you only pay one gas fee. That works out.
Which is huge. I mean, just to pause on that, that's incredible. Like,
And we got partnerships with Transact because we're going to be adding a debit card and credit card on-ramping natively in-app, none of this iframe crap. We got on-chain KYC and AML coming because, yes, we looked at KYC and AML. It's horrible. It feels invasive. Yes, stare at the camera and flash my passport. What? And then on top of that, you don't even know who has access to it. With our on-chain mm-hmm. KYC and AML system, it's on the blockchain. And not just that, we have a trigger system built in. So if any institution checks or requests your KYC or AML ID, it's recorded on the blockchain that happened and you get notified in app. You know, so we have all of these mm-hmm. things which are improving the experience. There are compromises that have to be done, unfortunately, like KYC and AML, to avoid certain things. But at the same time, they do not have to be over-leveraged in a draconian kind of spycraft kind of way. They can be. We're a firm believer in all of my companies of being a light touch. I mean, I'll give you an example. How do you stop people from communicating about or trading in child pornography, human trafficking, or terrorist content? How do you do that at the moment before homomorphic encryption has come out? How do you do that without having to hand over keys and decrypt everybody? And we've actually got a solution that we're building.
How do you do it?
Can't tell you too much about it because it's actually becoming a product that's going to release. That's going to be releasing. Okay. But what we have a capability that allows us to scan encrypted data in stream and identify patterns of content without needing a decryption key. So that basically means that it's almost like, in a sense, we can see through the veil, as it were.
Hey, real quick word from the sponsor for today's show, who is CrowdHealth, a longtime sponsor of Lions of Liberty. And I want to talk about health insurance, guys. Health insurance is crazy stupid. If you're a person who has ever been sick or had to use your health insurance, you probably understand how dumb and confusing it is. It's frustrating, too. And claim denials are really an all-time high, becoming much, much more common. In fact, last year, 1 in 5 Obamacare claims were denied. That's just downright unacceptable. So this headache of health insurance, this is why CrowdHealth came about. It's why it was created. Now, CrowdHealth is not health insurance, but it's an alternative. It's a better way through crowdfunding to pay for your health care. And it allows you to stop sending your money to these big insurance companies who are going to profit and who are going to make money off doing all kinds of ridiculous surgeries and things and interventions that you probably don't agree with. So you can join the crowd. And let me tell you how it works. At CrowdHealth, for just $175 for an individual or $575 for a family of four, you'll get access to a community of people who are willing to help you out in case of emergency. You'll get access to telemedicine visits, discounted prescriptions, and a ton more. And of course, you get to join the crowd, like-minded community members, people like you and me, people that love freedom, love liberty, and want to go against the grain, against these crazy health insurance companies. Let CrowdHealth meet your healthcare needs. You can get started for just $99 per month for your first 3 months by using code LIONS at joincrowdhealth.com. CrowdHealth is not insurance, guys, not insurance, but you can learn more how to join the crowd at joincrowdhealth.com. That's joincrowdhealth.com, code LIONS. So that sounds interesting, but we were talking about three letter agencies earlier. Sounds a little bit dangerous with that tech if they got a hold of it. So that would concern me there.
This brings me back to something I've mentioned in some other shows I've been in, which is that you really, as consumers, you all got to really start caring about who your CEOs are and where they come from. And I say that because it's going to tell you very quickly whether or not you can trust what they're building or whether or not their motivations are consistent enough for you to trust the vision that is leading to what they're building. Now, with this technology, one of the things that all of my shareholders had to get very comfortable with, and yeah, I have shareholders and I have some very robust discussions because sometimes my ethics will misalign with people's ambitions to make money. But I'm not one of those guys that will say swap his soul for wearing a dress or just $200 million. You know what I'm saying? That just ain't me. Doesn't fly. And one of the things that was very abundantly clear to all my shareholders is that I'm not selling my tech. I'm not selling my patents. I'm not selling my companies. That's that. And if people actually look into my history and my background, they'll see that I'm in 42 years, because I'm 42 years old, I have been incredibly consistent. Actually, there's a reason why I don't delete or hide my social media or post requests to Google to clean my social media footprint. I'm incredibly consistent, which means I invite people to ask me questions. I think I'm the only CEO in the tech world that actually says, literally ask me anything. I'm easy to find, even though I believe in privacy. As a CEO, I live my life incredibly publicly because I realize that's what I have to sacrifice my privacy so that people can actually trust and see that I'm being transparent and I can be held accountable. You know, these people who claim, oh my God, I want my privacy, but I want to be famous. Oh my God, I want my privacy. Oh my God, don't invade my privacy. Oh my God. So why are you in an industry that's all about look at me? You know, so you know what I'm saying? No. And I invite people to question me. I invite people to, even as my companies move into being billion-dollar valuations, I'm always going to be holding regular town hall meetings. I'll be inviting members of the consumer public to join these meetings and inform on our decision-making. You know, that's the reason. If you're going to build technology that helps a lot of people, almost always that technology can be used to screw a lot of people as well. I mean, lasers, are they amazing? They can solve a lot of problems, but they can also be used as a very dangerous weapon. Nuclear energy, incredibly useful for some healthcare. Also used by a lot of nutcases it's one of these things, unfortunately. So you have to, the thing you need to really be concerned with is, are the people developing the tech ethical people who you can rely on with a fair level of certainty are not going to turn into the next big Mr. Evil? And the way you determine that is, what is their background? Were they born with a silver spoon in their mouth? Because I'm telling you now, if they were, there's a super high probability they're not aiming it. They're not going to be interested in your version of reality. I mean, when I've met a lot of super rich people, and a lot of them are super nice, but they're almost all completely divorced from the reality that the majority of us experience. And given that we have CEOs running companies, which we are reliant on in our everyday lives practically now, Shouldn't these companies being led by people who are slightly closer to our life experience, so they're actually slightly going to have a better realization of what we actually need? Building products is not about doing trend searches and that kind of nonsense. It's about looking at the socioeconomics, looking at the sociopolitics of the world around you. What does the world need? You know?
Yeah, and that's truly what an entrepreneur should be at the heart of it, right? You're solving these problems, looking at the problems that are ailing society and trying your best to solve them. And yeah, it's gotten in this kind of way where the Musks of the world, the Zuckerbergs, I'm drawing a blank on more millionaires' names, the Larry Finks, BlackRock.
Bezos, Gates,
yeah.
You know, the less, you know, it goes on.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And they get in this mindset where they almost want to play God. And yeah. I think it's extremely dangerous. And I talk about in that intro at the beginning that I run, talk about overcoming your ego. And it seems like you've been able to do that in a way. And just curious, why do you think that is? Is that something from, you know, the way you were raised, or where does that come from?
I'll be blunt. My mother is an absolute psychopath. but she did one thing that was good, which was my education. My sister and I were engaging in critical thinking from a very early age. That is a clear definer between, one of the things that is a defining trait between Gen X and Gen Z is that Gen Xers, generally, critical thinking was forced on us from an incredibly early age. And I studied philosophy and psychology. I also studied behavioral psychology because I wanted to learn how to make machines better, basically. And that's when I started realizing a lot of things and realizing how screwed most of humanity is actually at a very base level. But I would say it's my education. I'll give you an example. My education was incredibly pragmatic. It wasn't about picking sides. I learned everything, the unvarnished horrifics, the good sides and bad sides of history about everybody. In terms of religion, I was made to read almost all the major books. And then my mother was like, by the way, that's all complete made up nonsense. You now understand science, come up to your own mind, make your own decisions about it. And I must admit, I gravitated more towards science than anything else. I had a very heavily science dominated upbringing. I didn't have toys. For presents, I got chemistry sets, microscopes and books. You know, so when you have that background, and bearing in mind, this background is set against a backdrop of living in a very poor council estate in Birmingham that's incredibly rough and is just up the road from one of the roughest parts of England at that point in time, Chelmsley Woods. You know, that backdrop as well also helps to hone how you want to fix things. Because you suddenly realize that when you're learning history and you're having this education and you're living in poverty, one of the things you learn very quickly is that poverty is a consistent across history. And it seems to be a consistent across history because it seems to be about scarcity, the haves and the have-nots. And you learn very quickly that these are artificial constructs. Now, my children, they've been through the modern education system. And I must admit, seeing the mainstream education system and having worked as part of the mainstream education system, I understand why so many people are left lost and confused in this modern world. Yeah. Seriously, because the education system is designed not to build people like me. It's designed to build people who will say, well, you know, I don't worry about my security because, you know, if you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to fear, you know.
It's designed to build factory workers.
Yes, it's designed
take orders.
It's designed to actually build consumers that are also commodities. I mean, we're all, we're from day one. I loved your intro. We're born free, yada, yada, yada. But let's think about the fundamentals of that in reality, are we? I mean, we have a birth certificate that assigns us a number. In the United States, you guys have various treasury notes and stuff assigned to that, et cetera, et cetera. It gets murky. We are a commodity. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why Facebook, Google, and Apple are all fighting the European Union over privacy laws, because the privacy laws coming into the European Union prohibit the utility of our data without our permission. No! Good God, that could break the entirety of how they make money. And this is the reason why when I was building my companies, I've designed my companies to be built around an infrastructure that is not reliant on advertising. So we have value. Our value is not an artificial thing that is based on whether or not we can suck up to advertisers and stuff like that, because we don't need them, you know, so they don't pull our strings. You know, and this is, it means, yes, it's taken me many years to build to where I am now. I mean, bear in mind, I started building back in 2017 when... to give you a little picture, back when I started building this, everybody was telling me, JB, you're nuts, you shouldn't build encryption, nobody needs it, we've got WhatsApp, we've got Signal, who needs it, only terrorists are going to use it, you're the problem. And then COVID happened, and everybody suddenly, then COVID happened, and we had some reality checks, like, we can work from home, we don't need offices, we can work fewer hours and get the same stuff done, and all of a sudden, we love being around our families. What? You know, we suddenly had some reality checks, and it was these reality checks that I built my product for. I knew I could see, I look at the world around me, I see what's happening. I look at my magic eight ball, and one of my many strengths, I hate to say it, is being able to predict what happens next. And it's, unfortunately, I'm often right. Vox Messenger was a product that was built for the future which is now. Hence why I built the infrastructure to incorporate Vox Crypto, because what is one of the biggest problems we have right now, apart from deplatforming? People are not just being deplatformed from social media, they're getting deplatformed from banks. Yes, say the wrong thing and your bank account gets taken. I thought we lived in a democracy. I thought we had freedom.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy times. And just to double down on what you said there about advertising and these advertising dollars really controlling the network. I mean, all you have to do is look at, if you watch TV in the United States, we have ESPN. You know, you watch your American football, you watch basketball, whatever. Every other commercial is a pharmaceutical company. And people are like, well, why are these pharmaceutical companies advertising? I'm not going to go out and call my doctor and, you know, get a pharmaceutical for my acid reflux at halftime of the football game. No, you're not. Of course you're not. They're doing that so they control the narrative that is said, you know, by the people who are broadcasting on those networks. And it's the same thing with social media, same thing with Facebook, same thing with Instagram, same thing with TikTok. They are able to control what is said on those platforms and what the algorithms push up to the top. I mean, it's as simple as that. So just wanted to make that point clear for anyone who didn't understand that.
It really is. I mean, I'll give you an example. We're getting ready to launch another one of our platforms, which is Vox Alive. Vox Alive is basically our version of Facebook, but again, without ads. You control your data, and your data exists in a pod that you can actually open up and monetize if you want to. It's a whole thing.
That that's cool.
Now, we only have two rules on Vox Alive, which is no child pornography, no human trafficking. Everything else, go nuts, which basically means one of our slogans is freedom of speech, not freedom of consequence, because everybody wants freedom of speech, but nobody wants to be deplatformed for the consequence of the freedom of speech. So we have one mechanic in Vox Alive, which is you can block people. It's as simple as that. You don't like what somebody's... You want to say something stupid, say something stupid. Just don't be surprised if people say you're stupid. But if you don't like them saying you're stupid, you just block them. Simple. Yeah. We don't really need much more than that in social media. We don't really... Once you have the capability to ascertain if people are discussing or transmitting human trafficking or child pornography data in an encrypted stream, you don't really need to have moderation groups then. You don't need to have these, these wage slaves. Yes, wage slaves. I'm going to call it like it is. Facebook and all these platforms, they literally employ wage slaves working in some of the poorest parts of our country, of the world, to go through the material, which, not being funny, would make the strongest minds of us go freaking insane after a period of time. And there are reports, many reports, some of which published by Vice, in which people who've worked for moderation teams in Facebook have reported the mental health problems they come out with after seeing the stuff, the content which is out there. And bear in mind, the people they're employing is literally nowhere near enough. Think about it like this. If you have 2 billion users, and these 2 billion users are spending 70% of their time on their social media network, you're going to need well over a few million humans moderating that stream if you're going to employ that kind of technique, which basically tells us that the Facebook and other social media networks model of moderating is doomed to failure from start to finish, actually. Now, the reason why AI moderation is kind of doomed to failure is because AI is reliant on what? Computer vision. What is computer vision reliant on? Is reliant on the same four data sets which was created and is mostly comprised of ethnically white people, predominantly from Europe and Northern America, which means any computer vision system built on it will only work with 6.7% of the world population with a high level of accuracy.
Good point. Yeah.
Bear in mind, these are systems which is deployed into your self-driving cars. Surveillance systems. You know, the number of misidentification of black and mixed race people on AI, on surveillance systems because of these computer vision problem systems. It's not that AI is trying to be racist or anything like that. It's just that the systems which have been designed are designed with little to no thought. And they're not designed with the majority of us in worldview. This is the reason why when we build a product with AI here at Cryotech or at any of the other companies, we build off of open source AIs. We do not use anything made by OpenAI or Facebook because we already know what they've been doing. And we've been monitoring their utility of data for the longest time. And we find sources of clean data. And if we can't, we will then build an educated system to create reliable synthetic data. On top of the new data sets that we're building for computer vision, we're also going to be donating those out to the world as well. So the world has more than just four freaking facial recognition data sets. It's just mind-blowing to me, but there's a reason why this hasn't changed. And it hasn't changed because all of these companies control legislature via lobbying and the government's kind of getting to bed with them. So why do they need to change if nobody is forcing them to? You know, has any big, super rich black family had a member of their family murdered by a computer vision system and then taken one of these people to court successfully? No. And until they do, nobody will really feel the impetus drive. Bear in mind, what is the reality here? Bottom line, unless it costs them money, why should they fix it?
Yeah. That's the sad truth. Yeah,
it stifles innovation, unfortunately.
And even when it does cost the money, they're weighing it against other other cost benefits. And
And then on top of that, they want to restrict access to it. You know, I'll give you an example. One of the things is originally we were going to move all of our companies into U.S. control, but then we started doing some digging into all of the U.S. restrictions on exports and who you can deal with and who you can't deal with, and it turns out to be like, you know, about 70% of the rest, you know, basically everywhere that doesn't want to use the US dollar. It's like, whoa, hold on. Business is just making time. I hate to say it, ladies and gentlemen, the BRICS world is the whole rest of the world. And it's way bigger. It's a bigger economy, way bigger market, huge fucking market in comparison to the Western one. And I've been saying this to my shareholders and other businesses. We are now reaching the point where these different world governments who are meant to actually not just work for the civilian populace, but also work collaboratively with business, in the aims of making business workable in their environments and sectors, they're not doing that. What do these big governments do? They don't pick the right companies. They get into bed with anybody, and it's pretty much whoever just hands them $100,000, they drop the drawers for. And then they try to tell every tech company, sorry, these guys who can afford to drop us a few hundred grand, they've set the rules for all of you now. No, sorry, no. No. You know,
yeah, that's not a way forward to create the best society. That's a way to create a train wreck, which is what we're running into right now. But
oh, dude, we're so close to the Victorian society, it's unreal. I mean, did you know here in the United Kingdom they banned peaceful protest? You know,
really?
Yeah, in the look, Americans, please do some research into the United Kingdom. It is not what you think you're being shown. There's stuff happening here which would have you all out with your guns immediately, reinforcing your rights very visibly.
I think maybe that's a misconception about the United States, because the United States, I mean, we have our own crises here. You know, right now we're being overrun in our southern border, and it's a whole other mess. And then just look at COVID. I mean, people in the U.S. just bowed down to these COVID lockdowns
Europe. My wife and I got deep. My wife, who's Slovenian, she lost many friends over COVID, unfortunately. These are friends who are scientists, who are doctors. And they all got themselves jabbed up. They ignored everything they knew about mRNA and what mRNA is. They ignored everything they knew about heavy metals and why you would need to use heavy metals to strip the outer cover of a nucleus and why that's a bad thing. These are actual scientists. And they still got co-opted into it. And my wife and I, we did take a lot of shit from it. How I even got shit from my friends for not being vaccinated.
Oh, I lost friends over it. I lost lifelong friends over it.
Yeah. I had a lot of arguments with people. And the reality is, again, it comes back to my education. My education, I studied genetics. I studied biology. You know, I didn't do what other kids got taught in biology, which is where they just studied reproductive systems. I got taught everything. I learned about ribonucleic acid and how you could actually... I'll give you an example. One of the things I did when I was a child, and these are still the evidence to this is outside my parents' house in Walby to this day, is every year, every season, these tulips spring up, which are multicolored red and yellow. They're unique. And I created them. I created them by actually mixing the phenotypes, the genetic material of two different types of tulip bulb, because I was obsessed with that kind of stuff. Because yes, you can do genetic engineering actually in your bedroom if you actually have enough knowledge. It's easy, people. Don't be afraid of this stuff. Go get it. And that's when I started noticing that all of this, all that kind of information instantly is, bear in mind, it's now, what is that? Now most of that information is on the banned list, when actually it's just basic science. There's so much information that is not taught to us because why? It's classified as restricted information. And again, this comes down to who we're allowed to talk to, who we're allowed to trade with, who are we allowed to believe are our enemies. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I am not related or from any of the big families. I think I'm about the only CEO that isn't. I'm the only CEO that's not from any form of money of any kind, and it's from a council estate. And you know what? I think it would be great. The way I'm operating my company is that in the future, I'm not going to be stifling competition. We're actually going to be creating competitor funds where we're going to be helping to fund competition. I want to see innovation. Innovation breeds new products which help people breed what? More profits. It's not all altruism, people. It just actually makes business sense. You take care of your consumers, you take care of your employees. They all keep buying. They're happy consumers. It's fairly simple, really, I think.
Yeah, I like it, man. I've enjoyed this conversation. I mean, the amount of stuff that you have going on, the amount of companies, the amount of moving parts, I don't know how you keep everything straight. Very, very impressive.
Very little sleep and lots of weed. That's it. in this industry sector, you have to have ways of decompressing because if you don't, you'll drown. And I can tell you this now, I'm never, ever setting up three companies and launching four products at the same time. Ever again after this, I'm doing it one at a time. You know,
yeah. Well, let's one more time here. Get your plugs for each of your companies, each of your products, so people can start using them, right? Because a lot of them are out there now, and there's more coming down the pike. So yeah, give that information.
Okay, horrific plug time. So we have Vox Messenger, which is available at vox-messenger.apple, just by searching the Google Play Store. Currently available on Android, but we are publishing to iOS. I'm not going to give you the fixed time. We're hoping for release in the coming weeks. But the iOS App Store, it can be a little bit tricky at times and a little bit complex. So we're still working with that. Vox Crypto is also already available on Android. Just Google Vox Crypto or visit vox-crypto.app or type in Vox Crypto into the Google Play Store. It's there. And that is actually being released on iOS very shortly as well. We have a new version of Vox Messenger coming out, which is version 3. which is decentralized, interoperable, and actually combines Vox Crypto, the crypto wallet and bill payment capabilities into one application, which is about April time we're looking at for that. Wow. At Degin, my other company, we have Spatial Scan, which is the software that allows you to 3D scan and take your 3D scans and edit them in a Adobe-like interface. So think of it like we basically have the Adobe Photoshop of 3D scanning and linear editing all in one application called Spatial Scan 3D, which is going to be releasing very soon, featuring autonomous markerless camera sync. And it's the only volumetric camera software out there under $1,000 that allows you to use not only the Intel RealSense, but the Kinect, the Orbit, and the Luxonis Oak D device, which are some of those are super cheap devices which many people have access to. So it makes our 3D scanning software kind of like the everyman software out there. We do have stuff coming out at Gorgon, but you'll have to wait and see for that exciting stuff. Another feature that's going to be coming out to Vox Messenger soon, which I think your audience will be particularly interested in, is the ability to communicate across mesh networks, i.e. LoRaWAN. Yes, Vox Messenger is incorporating Helium and is also incorporating a number of other, including MeshTastic, compatibility to its infrastructure, which basically means in the event of a Black Swan event, everybody would still actually be able to maintain decentralized communications using any LoRaWAN system around them. Now, What is LoRaWAN? Super low power radio communications, super cheap. I'll give you an example. A MeshTastic receiver, Google it, you can get for about $14, and it will allow you to communicate with somebody else via text over 5 kilometers away for free. Now, all across the United States and the world, there are lots of these different antennas. Hell, I run a Helium antenna myself on the side of my house. So we're building that capability. And because Vox Messenger, the way to think of Vox Messenger is, and I invite everybody to question me on this and to check if I'm telling the truth and to ask questions and to probe us. But Vox Messenger is literally designed to be the application for every person. The application that you can trust and use to pay your bills, to send crypto to your friends and family, because we know crypto is the future of finance. You know, there's a reason why the slogan for Vox Messenger is "I am the messenger." The slogan for Vox Crypto is "I am the bank." We are basically building systems that you control, you have control over, and you own. And not only do you own them, but in the future you'll be able to profit from them directly as well.
Fantastic. JB Nelson, thank you for being so generous with your time and coming and sharing with my audience today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's great being here.
Hey, right. Thanks for watching, listening to today's interview with JB Benjamin. Just an awesome guy, really impressive CEO, founder, who has so much stuff going on in the digital space, the crypto space, the messaging space, the encrypted messaging space, and tying much of that together in very interesting ways. So I learned a ton throughout the course of this interview, and I'm looking forward to trying out his products. If you guys like what we do here at Lions of Liberty, if you like the content, if you like my show, Brian's show, our content we have on Fridays with Memoirs, please consider supporting us, patreon.com/Lions of Liberty or lionsofliberty.locals.com. It helps us. We can help you with some bonus content, give you some more stuff for your listening pleasure. And it's a win-win for everyone. Hope everyone has had a great start to the new year. We'll keep it going next week. On next week's podcast, I'll be bringing on Chris Spangle to talk about the future of podcasting. So be sure to subscribe so you get this this podcast, Lions of Liberty, or Finding Freedom, if you're on just the solo podcast feed for this show. Either is fine. Same great show. Just be sure to subscribe so you get it delivered to your little listening device in your pocket that we call a cell phone. I will see y'all next week. In the meantime, always remember to keep your head up and those fires of liberty burning.